Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the iCollege at the National Defense University. Bob, would you tell us more about the classroom of the future? What other technologies does the iCollege employ that our audience may want to hear about?
Okay, the classroom of the future, my people like to refer to as the C plus to the I power. and that has a number of implications to it. C meaning communication, collaboration, and creativity. And then it's magnified to the I power, innovation and imagination. And I've got some very, very creative people. So what they're doing in this room, they've been out to the Cisco Center in San Jose, and they've talked to those people. And this is going to be a room where you come in, it's sight, it's sound, it's feel. And we're going to dedicate this room probably in April or May. In fact, you're welcome to come over and visit us for that. But it's going to have a lot of 3D and high def in it. It's going to have a Microsoft Surface, which are touch screens and everything. But it's going to be a different type of projection. We've had touch screens before, but this is going to be mobile. In the past, you used to have projection and had to go through. So this will be pretty cool. And it's going to combine a lot of things like telepresence, virtual worlds, visualization, augmented reality, and things of that sort. Everything's going to be movable within the room. It's going to be kind of a round room. It's not going to be a square room. There's not going to be anything permanent in it. And it's not going to be a room as you preconceive a room. Movable furniture, the key being flexibility, agility, and configurations. You reconfigure and do all those kind of things. So I've got high expectations for it. Now, I won't go into it now, but we keep adding things to our crisis management room. We have the virtual reality, the screens. Every time I walk in there, they have a new presentation and different things, and they're doing new simulations in that area.
Great, Bob. I have the pleasure when I have my guests on to talk about the use of collaboration and partnership among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you leveraging partnerships to improve operations and outcomes?
Partnerships are the key, and we've heard about this, and I've gone back in my notes. For years, we've talked about partnerships, but we have one very strong partnership with AFSCME International because they're a nonprofit and they tie together the military sector, and they're in all areas of cyber in particular and homeland security, and they tie it together with the federal sector of corporations and everything, and that's the space that we're in. So we work in both those areas. So we have a strong partnership, and as I told you, we leverage that, and they've helped us. They helped us in Singapore with the conference, and they helped us in London. We have a relationship with IAC ACT. That one is more the business federal sector and the interagency, and we're big interagency too. As I said, 30% of our population is out of the interagency. And then we really leverage our partners in putting on our conferences and sponsoring our conferences. McAfee and Microsoft and IBM have sponsored conferences that we put on. Not only do they sponsor it, but they sponsor it and support it in the sense they give us some of their best speakers. Don Proctor from Cisco was in, David Auchsmith from Microsoft. We've had a number of top speakers that have come in. Bob Lentz, who used to work in NII, works with McAfee now. He was our speaker over in Dubai, and he was outstanding. So the support we get from these people, and once again, back to the global hub concept, it's very based on partnerships. I've got to have an academic institution that is my co-sponsor. I've got to have speakers from the private sector, and I have to have government people coming in, government being both military and interagency.
In some quarters, there's a perception that the government lags behind the private sector in innovation. First, do you think this perception is accurate? And second, how do you think government could enhance its position to become a leader and, in fact, a driver of innovation?
Well, I think it's going to have to be a driver of innovation. And it's going to have to be the driver. I don't see corporations, they're coming up with technology. They're not coming up with the uses of that technology. And I think with the drastic changes that we're seeing in government, both transparency, we're not using the word, but downsizing the military and the changes that Secretary Gates are putting in place, we're going to have to become better. And the answer is technology. In fact, I was at the CES conference, Consumer Electronics Convention conference in January, and it's all about the experience, but the experience has to be more effective and more efficient. So we're going to have to use the technologies. Now, I won't give you specific examples, but I would direct you. I love to read the awards that are given to agencies for using technology. And if you go in and you look at any of the award groups that do this, you know, your Government Computer News or InfoWorld or any of these, and the awards they give, you can find great examples. In fact, I am incredibly impressed when I read what other people are doing. I mean, I'm amazed at the creativity and the way people are doing things. So it's just not publicized. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to have to do it more and more.
Budget realities.
Budget realities. And I think it's up to the government to do it because the companies aren't coming up with the solutions.
In the context.
They're coming up with the, yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of awards, you recently were honored as one of the federal 100 award winners. And I understand that you are only one of two individuals who have the Fed 100 status over the last 3 years for consecutive. Would you tell us more about the award and what it means to be recognized by your peers so consistently?
Well, number one, I feel incredibly honored to receive that. But I look at it as an organizational thing more than an individual thing. And I think when you look at the achievements of a number of these individuals, I think the thing you kind of reflect back and you say, why me? And it's kind of an affirmation that you're doing things that are important, that other people think you're doing important things. And the committee is different every year, and the awards have all been for different things, and they've been put in by different people, I understand. So consequently, I think it kind of fires the organization, their motors and their creativity to say, hey, we're being recognized for this. In this case, it may be Bob who's the boss, but we all recognize he's getting the credit for all the work that we're doing out there. But it can be a launch pad for new things. And I've mentioned this to you before, and I think I may have said it the last time. It also creates a platform that you can talk about the things that your organization is doing. And as I told you, one of my biggest challenges is getting the word out on what we do. So any award that we receive, and we've received a number. Last year, Dr. Jamal received a Rising Star Award from Government Computer News. We had Dr. Kathy Downs received an award for teaching net centricity. We had Professor Duke. He received one for teaching information assurance. We received a telework award. We were one of the first organizations in the federal government. We've been doing it for years. We got an award for distributed learning. So the organization has gotten a lot of awards. And what that tells me is we're out there on the cutting edge of doing things. So that's, to me. But yeah, am I excited to get it? Certainly. In fact, the award ceremonies gives me a chance to see a lot of people in one place that I can line up as speakers for our courses or get them to sit on focus groups or whatever. So, no, it's a great honor.
That's terrific. I want to turn to the future. What are some of the major opportunities and challenges your organization will encounter in the future, and how do you envision your organization, the iCollege, evolving to meet those challenges and seize those opportunities?
Okay, I think the biggest challenge is the cutback in the number of people in the government, because that's cutting back on the population that can attend courses. At the same time, I think that tells me that people are going to be moving through the system faster. If there is the tsunami we've been hearing about for years, which I haven't seen yet, of people exiting the federal government, that means other people are going to have to move up very quickly in the positions of responsibility. And anybody in a position of responsibility today that doesn't understand the use of information technology is at a severe disadvantage. So I think one of my challenges and our faculty's challenge is, how do we transform from an organization that you can pretty much tell what's going to happen, all of a sudden things could drastically change. Do we need to consider taking younger students to jumpstart them, lower-ranking students to jumpstart them into programs? We're obviously now taking programs around the world. The question with travel cuts and everything like that, when you're putting on conferences, technology, telepresence works, but you need a physical presence in places to do things like that. So that will clearly be a challenge to us. And as far as one of my things is, now this will sound strange, getting quirky individuals, people that are really unique but love what they're doing and are going to take the college and move it ahead. Because the creativity doesn't come from the front office. The creativity comes from the people down in the trenches, and the front office just has to recognize that talent and give it the opportunity to shine, if you will.
Well, Bob, as you reflect on your career in public service and education, what advice would you give those who are considering a career in either public service or education?
I would say, number one, look for opportunities to learn and put yourself in any kind of new situation that you can. To me, some of the scariest situations that I've either been put into or I've kind of half volunteered and gone into have been the most valuable learning experiences. It's the old thing, an organism, I was a biology major, I didn't tell you that part. An organism is either growing or dying. And if educationally, if you're not continually learning in this environment, you're dying. So you've got to take every advantage to learn things that you can. You have to understand technology. Nobody is going to undersee it. You don't have to be a technologist, but you have to understand the value of it. And I put myself in that category. I'm not a technologist, but I certainly see the advantages of it. And I surround myself with people who can use it. Relationships. I've always heard this, and I know it more, your success and about the Fed 100. Any success I have is based on my relationship with other people. People that know you, people that respect you, people that you help. And then I would tie into that, be passionate about what you're doing. I mean, that's what sends me to work. I'm excited every day to go to work. I was excited to be here today. You have to have a passion, you have to be enthusiastic, and you have to show it. And I think people follow you then, if you believe it.
Well, Bob, I mean, your passion and you champion the iCollege and its mission, it's obviously clear to me. This is the second time we've had the pleasure of having you on the show. And I want to thank you for your time today, but more importantly, I want to thank you for your dedicated service to the iCollege at NDU and to the country.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I've got one quote, if we have a minute, that I'd like to read, and it's kind of about the future. And I was asked about this when I had actually a little more time to reflect and write it down, and I'd like to read that. What does the future look like? The horizon looks like a fireworks display, and I don't see anybody headed for the showers on this one. Here's what I think is coming. I want us to be the very best. That's what has and will continue to turn me on and to light my fire. Second, there's no peak in the learning curve. The best is yet to come, and I don't see it as a learning curve. It's attempting to go vertical, and we have to learn how to deal with it. And there's a song that Neil Diamond has, Headed for the Future, and the Future is Now. It's a great song. If you listen to it, it really gets my heart going, and it explains the future is now, and we've got to do something about it. So I'll end with that.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Dr. Robert Childs, Chancellor of the iCollege at the National Defense University. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.